Welcome to Bitch Talk. I'm your host, Erin, here with my co-host, Ange, aka Captain Party, and our producer, Shar. And over the last 10 years, we've been elevating marginalized voices through interviews and events.
Sometimes over a glass of whiskey. But if you're thirsty for more bitches, find us at bitchtalkpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram.
A big thank you to 48 Hills and our listeners for voting us Best of the Bay Best Podcast in 2022.
And now, on with the show.
Our guest today needs no introduction because he's been on Bitch Talk like 5 million times. W. Kamau Bell, thank you so much for spending time with us again today.
Thank you for having me. I love to come back on. I am an unofficial co-host.
Yes.
Checks in the mail.
And thanks for coming. It's the first podcast recorded in my new office space, so welcome.
Oh, we're the first.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to be really in the family to get into this space at this point. Oh. It is not open to the public.
And also, it was hard for us to get in, so even if you are in the family, sure. Like, you really got to knock, and you really got to,
It's a Lord of the Rings situation. You can't just walk into the office.
We did have someone down on the first floor with a stroller help us get in. Yeah. So that was the first hurdle.
And it's sort of tricky. Like, and then is Kamau doing things with babies? Like, we tried to make it confusing. It's like, yeah, we tried to make it confusing.
Well, that was our first test and we passed.
It was. Yeah, we got through.
If the baby didn't like you, you're not allowed to come in.
So. They did frown at us. But it was funny driving up because, of course, we saw you on the street, which was hilarious. And you were like the mayor of Piedmont Avenue. Yeah. People are yelling at you. Yeah.
You should have a bell. Like, here, I'm here.
Yeah. Is that how it goes every day?
I mean, people have started to realize that I'm around here. So at first it was like, oh, my God, for some people. Not everybody, obviously.
Well, we saw that video, but we don't have to talk about it.
Well, it was like, and now people are like, hey, it's the guy. Like, they're sort of like, hey, you're here again at the fine lunch again. Like, yeah. So it's been very funny.
I love it.
Because I was working out of our house, and so, you know, maybe I'm ordering Uber Eats, but I'm not, like, going out to get lunch in here. I'm like, I like being sort of more able to go outside and get fresh air and stuff. So I'm running into people.
You're also a real person.
I am a real person, it turns out.
He eats just like us.
Yeah.
us weekly stunt photo shoots. Come out. Eats burritos just like us.
But which burrito? That's the...
Today I went with chicken because I just recently had a big birthday. And so I'm trying to extend my life a little bit. So I had chicken.
Yes. Good for you. Lean proteins.
Yeah, lean proteins. Still a burrito.
Still a burrito.
Still a burrito, Still a burrito, but a chicken burrito, and
it was only beans and chicken. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe some lettuce. Yeah. No, that's terrible. You've been doing a lot lately. There's a Peabody Award you won.
Yes.
We need to talk about Cosby. Like you just said, we're sitting in a new production company in Oakland. It's called Who Knows Best Productions. Very good.
Melissa did that.
Very good.
Yeah.
And 1000% Me on HBO, which I want Anne to talk about it more because I'll start crying.
Then I want you to talk about it. Then I can cry too.
Yeah, I mean, you're the half-ass around here.
I am the half-ass.
You gotta talk. Come on. That's what I affectionately call her. Okay. Yeah.
I am a half-ass.
No, and I was the whole time, I'm like, oh, Aaron's a mess right now, as I was watching it, like, in the best way possible.
Yeah.
So can you just introduce to our audience this documentary?
So during, like, the 2020 COVID era, and there was like, and George, I have to go a bit since it's real here. After George Floyd was murdered by the police, there was the racial reckoning that happened. I don't know if you recall that fixed America's racism.
Oh, yeah, we're fixed.
A part of that was like all these big companies coming to black creatives and being like, what can we do better? How can we do better? So I had a lot of like corporate. So in addition to like doing like talk shows that I did a lot, I also had a lot of corporate meetings and did a lot of DEI work. DEI, is that a thing?
DEI.
Do your own DEI work.
Yes.
DEI. And I had a meeting with HBO, the documentary people at HBO, who I had never met before. And they were just like open to ideas. And they were the ones who said, you talk about, we've seen all these, like, all this content of you doing jokes and like talking about your mixed race kids, but we've never like heard you really go into it. Would you be open to that? And it was like, huh, because me and Melissa have worked hard to like keep our kids out of the spotlight. Mm-hmm. They're like, the most they've ever been on my social media is with this project. You know, sometimes I'll shoot the back of their heads because I think it's, you know, but I'm not trying to like. So first me and Melissa had to go, would we want to do this? Because it felt weird to make a thing about mixed race kids and not include our kids. And then it was like, well, do we feel safe enough to do this? Do we feel like we're in a position where we can protect our kids from whatever the consequences are? And then once we sort of even suggest the idea to our kids, especially our two, Sam and Juno, the two oldest kids, they're like, yes, we're doing it. We're doing it. Yes.
No questions.
No, they were just, wow. I mean, they've been around my career enough to get what it is and to get the benefits of it and to have, like, you know, like, they went on part of my book tour to, like, Atlanta and Houston, and they, like, would, like, they help setting up the books and stuff. And so they like the career. They get that, like, sometimes we get free stuff because people are like, oh, I love you. Here's some ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why we go to film festivals.
Yeah, exactly.
For the swag.
Yeah, for the swag. So they were so excited about it. And then it was like, well, what will we do? And so the project went through a lot of different, like, brainstorm things. But really it all came together when we were like, because I talked to HBO about it in, like, summer of 2020. But we didn't start until October of 2021 because I was deep into Cosby and also deep into the United Shades. And so we had to, like, sort of, like, create the space for it. HBO was also like, we don't need it. It's not Game of Thrones. So whenever you're ready, which I appreciated. So October of 2021, we were like, well, let's just get some kids around the bay so we don't have to travel a lot so we can figure it out. And let's just shoot for 3 days and just see what we get. Let's just bring kids in to talk to them about being mixed. And we had a great producer named Latasha Lewin who, like, reached out to local organizations and, like, you know, found you have mixed kids that you think would talk and da-da-da-da. And a lot of their parents knew my work, so that helped. And we shot that first weekend. Initially, we were like, well, we'll shoot in the Bay, and then we'll shoot around the country, and we'll find mixed kids everywhere, and we'll talk. And then after that first weekend, I was like, I think we're done. Because the kids were so great, and there was, like, very few. The only kid who didn't work at all was a kid who was just too young, and he's actually in the clip of the kid showing his butt. Like, it's the very beginning. It's like, I was like, some of the interviews went better than others, and there's these two grandparents and a kid who's just like, ah!
Yeah.
Like, so, and I felt like, he was just too young. It wasn't his, it was just, and so, but there was such a, like, Sammy's friends were great, Sammy was great, Juno was great, then these kids I didn't know were great, like, and they all had different personalities, and they all were like, I thought it was going to be a more, like, let's talk about hair and skin color. But the kids all got really deep in ways, in different ways. And it suddenly felt like this is deeper than I thought it was. Also, this is already the core of the film. And if we fly around the country, I know how that works. You're just going to use less of the thing you already have when this seems like we're already there. So that's how it all sort of started. And then it sort of like, you sort of, and then it really became organic. Well, we talked to these kids. What if we talk to some of their parents? Wait, Anissa's got two brothers. Let's talk to her. And it became like, wait, instead of talking to me and Melissa, let's talk to our moms, you know? So it really sort of developed organically, which at some point you're like, does this make sense? Like, but we kept watching, like, it feels like it's something. And so then we just sort of released it out to the world to see what would happen. Yeah.
And what's the feedback been?
I mean, overwhelmingly great. Sammy actually asked me, does anybody hate the documentary? And I was like, of course they do. I mean, you know,
there's
haters. There's always haters. I'm not trying. And not even that there's some people have criticisms, which, like, why didn't you talk to kids around the country? Why aren't there more experts in it? Some of you point out there's no black moms in it. Like, you know, and I sort of like, so these are not illegitimate criticisms. They're just not the film we made.
Right. Yeah. But who's more of an expert than the person living through it, first of all? But also, second of all, I love that it was focused on the Bay. Especially in a time we were talking before we started recording where everybody's saying, oh, you're from San Francisco. Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Oh, you're from the Bay. Oh, how do you sleep at night? Yeah, I just got this. I was in Europe and I got it a few times.
Wow.
And I love that you just show this picture of life here that also coincides with all the tough stuff.
Yeah, that this is all happening while whatever's happening in the Tenderloin District is actually happening in San Francisco. That is not the entirety of the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, so I think that, like, and it also, like, it sort of, like, does two things. We really enjoyed it. Like, it sort of defines the Bay Area as a place that we want the Bay Area to be. And it also shows that it's not perfect. Like, it was really important to have the older kids in there go, like, yeah. You know, once you get to that preteen high school age, the world starts to push in on you in a different way. And so to show that, like, it's not. And then to have, like, and it, like I said, it was really organic. Like, we had actually hired Greg, who's in the doc with his niece, Kaylin, to be a consultant on the film because he's mixed race.
Mm.
And then we were, like, looking for more kids. And he's like, my niece would be good. And then it became like, well, Greg's already here. Greg. And they also became clear what their relationship was. Like, she was like, he's my favorite person. It's like, well, then Greg, you're in the dock now.
Love with both of them. Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
For mixed kids like me that are of a certain age,
Gen X,
we're Gen X, right? That's what we just had a whole conversation about. Have there been people like me that have told you, like, these are
the conversations that we never had with our families and that maybe now we're having them.
That's my favorite. The thing I've heard a lot and also one of my favorite things to hear is mixed adults saying, I wish I had this then, but yes. I'm glad I have it now. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's like, because we really, the thing that's so different about this project than other projects I made, we made it intentionally for families to sort of be family friendly. I think it's the only thing I've ever released that's technically TVG or whatever the, whatever sure. the like United Shades and We Need to Talk About Cosby, not TVG. So you don't want to, at one point we thought it might be just for kids, but HBO was like, we don't want to make it just for kids. So the fact that it sort of like has enough that it is rounded out that kids can watch it and get into it, but also adults can still hang with it and there's enough in there. We also kept it an hour purposely because it felt like it's the conversations that happen afterwards that are important.
Yes.
That what it sort of, and it's sort of like, I compare everything I do to this, but it's like a poo-poo platter. And they didn't have poo-poo platters on the West Coast, did they? Do you guys know what a poo-poo platter is?
They have them. Isn't that Hawaiian?
Yeah, it's like Hawaii. And you eat it with your hand.
Yes. I think of it as East Coast Chinese restaurants, but apparently it's a Hawaiian thing that somehow ended up. But it's not a,
we know, you know.
So anyway.
I think we know how that happens.
Yeah. But let's go. It's like a buffet. It's so complicated. There's a little piece of lots of different versions of mixed identity and mixed conversations. No conversation is totally complete, but it's enough of the conversation that you feel satisfied, and then you can continue the conversation, whatever piece of the conversation you want on your own.
Yeah.
What's that really bad buffet restaurant? Golden Corral. It's the Golden Corral.
It's the Golden Corral.
I was going to say a non-PG term, too. It's like the fluffer for, you know, conversations about...
That's not as family friendly, certainly.
Yeah, sorry. That is not TVG.
No, but that's the bitch talk equivalent. But I do want to say, for me, my parents, both of them were Filipino, but for me, it even struck a chord like, oh, we never talked even about our culture.
Yes.
Let alone them being immigrants and me being first generation and how that made me feel. So, you know, it made me feel a certain kind of way about that too, and why it's just important, regardless if you're mixed, if you're this, that, just to talk about your culture and where you come from.
Well, that's how it also got deeper. So we had Presley, who's a little girl who plays bass and is in a band.
Oh, Peeboo.
Yeah.
And the Cats.
I didn't know that was a thing until after the doc came out. Okay, so Peeboo. So
yes.
Yeah,
sure.
But Presley like showed up, and it was like, and Presley had a concert the night before, so she was really tired and really sort of under, and her interview's really sort of under. And her dad was like, she's so, and I was like, no, it's fine. Because also every kid has a different energy.
Mm-hmm.
But then the thing that really clicked is when I was like, yeah, we're like, bring your instruments if you want to play. And so they set up to play a little bit, Stepping Stone by the Beatles. Not by the Beatles, by the Monkees. That's the funniest thing. I confuse the Beatles with the Monkees.
Animals? I don't know.
So Stepping Stone by the Monkees, and to watch her dad play with her and having his attention focused on her, but also doing the thing where he didn't want to get in her way, was like, I want to hear him talk. Because he was so clearly like trying to, helping her create a space for her creativity and her joy, but also not, and wanting to be there for it, because he was having a good time with it, but not wanting to like elbow her out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we sat down with him and Jen, his wife, to hear him go into the whole Filipino culture thing about how, which I was not expecting, to talk about how race had played into his upbringing and how Presley coming into his life opened his, and the Trump era just totally opened his eyes. And it was super vulnerable. And when we put it together, I was like, does this guy know how vulnerable he got? Like, does he know? I always felt like, man, I would hate for this to come out and him to feel like, I didn't realize I said all that. But the funny thing was, he was like, thanks for cutting all that stuff out I said about my mom. Because he went in on his mom. And we left some of it in, but it was much thicker. Mm-hmm. And so, but it was just like, I've gone to a bunch of screenings that he's been to, or two screenings that he's been to, and he sits, there's a whole Filipino crew that comes out, because you know, you all like
yes,
to,
yeah. We roll deep.
And to see them like high-fiving and laughing and like, and looking at each other, even when Miles says something about his Lola, they're all like, yeah, like Miles said something and he did it with like, he did an impression of his grandmother, and so he
did
the accent, and they looked at each other like, you know, it was just like, to feel that like cultural connection with people who aren't necessarily mixed, but they're seeing themselves reflected.
No, sorry. When Miles said Filipinos like to party, I was like, get it, Miles. You know.
I love that because it's so funny. First of all, everybody likes to party, but he was like, no.
No,
it's different. And I appreciate, love the like, Filipinos like to party.
Yeah.
I can hear it. I've heard it a million times. Well, Filipinos like to party. And to talk about his Lola. And then we had that footage of him in the kitchen together. And then like, and then also the fun part for me was also like, I wrote about this in the op-ed I wrote in SF Gate. Like the moments that weren't really about them being mixed, just about the kids being kids. And so when Sumaya asked her what her racial mixes are, and she lists dogs or animals, and I was just like, "We have a film!" Like it just felt like
that was it.
It was not. I don't like when things are totally on message the whole time.
Yeah.
And like to hear Miles talking about like what his grandmother gave him advice, his Lola gave him advice. I'm like, "What advice did she give you? Tell them your dad looks like Denzel Washington." It was just like perfect, great.
Just hand him the Peabody now.
Exactly.
Give him the next one.
I was just like, that's what we want in this film. These are kids. And they are not always, even if you sit them down and we want to talk about one thing, kids are going to be thinking about lots of things. And so to see that their personalities come through was really exciting. Or when like there's a moment where Anissa, who's Pakistani and black, she says like, I'm like, do you have siblings? She's like... And you could just feel that, like, kid who's like, oh, yeah, dude, I don't even want to talk about it. Why'd you got to bring that up?
We were having such a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of, you know, kids having different personalities, I love the your two daughters that are
in. Oh, they're in here, too.
They're in there. Yeah. And they couldn't, at least from what you've showed, they couldn't be more different, but also more the same. But I love them. I want to hang out with them. They seem very cool. I think I texted you, like, your eldest daughter's, like, going into her 30s, right?
Oh, mid-30s? She's more mature than we are, for sure.
Yeah.
And more self-confident.
And also, since the film is coming out, she walked in here, you would think she's 25 years old. Because she's now, like, a sixth grader.
Right.
She's got, like, a style. And,
yeah.
And, like, has a whole thing and has her, you know, she's a whole,
she's way more put together than we are.
And well-spoken.
And she's about to turn 12, which is funny. But she's, like, if she walked in here right now, it would be, like... Oh, here's another person who works here, another producer.
Yeah, right. Yeah. She probably is going to be a producer, right?
Yeah, she will be. So.
But I was going to ask, what did you learn from them while you were interviewing them? Or, you know, what were their...
I mean, I was really... So they're with them, it's like, of course, it's not like you have to pre-interview them because you already know a lot of the stories. Mm-hmm. And you're sort of like... So I'm... Like with Juno, I was like sort of trying to get... And she was also younger. I was just trying to set her up to tell
what
stories.
What a doll she is. Oh.
She's such a, like, she we call her Kamau Jr., or I call her
Kamau Jr. The whole time we're like, that is his daughter. Like,
which is funny, because again, we don't, it's not that we look exactly alike.
No.
I mean, there's certainly, but it's just like, but our essence is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And with Juno, I'm like, the thing about Juno, she's like, really, she's like a middle kid who's like, she's an only child who happens to be a middle kid.
Yes.
And I was an only child, so I was like, I see you. It would be better if you were an only child. Believe me, I understand. So I always try to give her space to, like, because she feels very, like, hemmed in. But, yeah, Juno, it was just, like, so Juno has told me stories, and me and Melissa stories, off camera, but to hear her tell those stories on camera and still claim them the same way. So when Juno says, I was upset when a kid accused me of being white, you just feel like there's so many, the history in this country, especially with light-skinned black people, of passing.
Mm-hmm.
Don't judge them at all, because it's survival. But to hear Juno, a kid who could and might and someday might be seen as white in certain circles, to really claim her blackness in a conflict, in a way that Juno doesn't want to have conflict. She's a kid. She's like, she's kind of like me when I was younger. I would just like to get through this life. I don't want to fight. And so, but she's like, she couldn't let it go. And then to say it on camera, to see this kid who maybe the world doesn't necessarily see as black, or the whole world, to say, no, I refuse to let go of my blackness. It was just, that was just like, you know, who's cutting onions?
Yeah,
and
then exactly.
Sammy, when I asked Sammy, I tried to ask Sammy a very direct, simple question about what do you see when you look in the mirror, which I was trying to ask her about her skin tone. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know, I don't think mirrors really show you who you really are.
Like, what?
Come on, Bell Hooks Jr., what are you doing here? Like, just answer the cute question about brown, or light brown, or tan, or brown sugar. I'm trying to set you up for something that I have planned, and you've taken it to a different...
Yeah.
Now you're on a PhD thesis somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was just the eloquence in which they talked about it, while also still... And, like, and to see them on camera, that's who they are. Like, both of them. Juno's a little bit like...
Yes.
And Sammy's very like, I'm ready for my time.
Poised.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah. Poised.
And so they're not different. And the fact is, I think it does help to see how physically different they look,
mm-hmm.
like, which is going to affect their lives. And so, like, and how, and we actually released some bonus footage because we had so much extra stuff where they talk about the difference in their hair and how neither one of them wants the other one's hair.
Hmm.
which is the thing that, like, sometimes kids with hair like Sammy want the longer, straighter hair. And sometimes kids with longer hair were like, I wish I had more body. Like, and they're both like, no, I like your hair, but I like my, you know. So to see that they're growing up in a world that they feel, of course, their anxiety, of course, they went through the pandemic, of course, all the things in the last few years. But there's some core of them, like, that they are holding on to themselves, which makes me and Melissa feel like, again, who's cutting onions?
Well, I think that's another big takeaway is the emotional intelligence, the capacity of a child to have this emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. You just have to talk to them.
Yes.
And that's just kind of all it takes, right? And I called, you better believe I called all of my friends with children, like, watch this, whether they're mixed or not, because it's inspiring and it gives me hope for the future.
Yeah, and I think that... it's just, I think, giving kids access to talk about that stuff. I mean, my mom did it with me. Like, she never talked to me like I was a kid. She was like, I never even did baby talk with you. I'm like, you probably could have done some baby talk. But, like, she just talked to me like I was just a younger friend. Now, she was the adult who paid the rent, and I respected her and all that kind of stuff. So I never felt like I was her equal. But I felt like my opinion mattered. And so me and Melissa have done that with our kids. And a lot of the kids in there, you can see their parents are, like, treating them like their opinions matter. The issue becomes when these kids get older, get out in the world, and the world doesn't treat them the same way, which is what you see with, like, Carter and Kaylin, where suddenly it's like, whatever you were told at home, the world is looking at you in a different way, you know? And so that's why it was good to have these older kids in here, just to be like, and then to even have some of the, like, Greg to talk about growing up in Berkeley, to be like, you know, this is, again, it ain't all perfect out here. So, but hoping... The goal is to create a world where those kids can hold on to themselves without the world constantly pushing them in. And as happens with every group in this country that is not white, every generation does a little more work to create room for the following generation. So I think mixed folks, there are mixed folks doing that work right now and have done that work. But the issue is, I don't know that they feel able to do it as publicly as the rest of us, because their identity is often in question by all of us. So the doc is trying to, like, open up that conversation to a little more of a mainstream conversation. So, like, you go on Instagram, and you probably may have had some of this. Anytime a mixed person on Instagram says, I'm mixed, here's some things I want to say, the comments just go off in many different directions that aren't like, good for you, thank you for doing that. We feel so supportive of you claiming who you are in the world. That's in there, but there's also a lot of other stuff.
Or, like, I had no idea. You're like, okay, cool, let's talk about it. It was funny during the pandemic. It was the first time, because, you know, you start during the pandemic, at least I did, started going down the rabbit holes of different groups and people saying the things you wanted to hear or, you know, haven't heard before and were interested in it. It was the first time that I entered into, like, a Zoom party meeting with a bunch of mixed folks, and it was specifically for Asians who are mixed, and it was so eye-opening. We were all, like, just looking at each other on the Zoom room and, like, trying not to cry, but also like, oh my god, we're all here. But it was, that's the first time.
It's funny, I've heard there are obviously a lot of kids in the doc who are Asian, part Asian, Asian and Asian. I'm trying to say it in a way that doesn't sound like half. I'm trying not to say half Asian.
You want to say half Asian?
Yeah.
Half-ass?
I'm not going to do that.
No, he's not. He's not saying it.
I appreciate that. But there are kids in there who have Asian heritage. Let's say that. And I've heard from a lot of Asian folks who appreciate it because again, that's not. I really was really focused on. I already got the black and white kids covered because we had them. Me and Sammy and Juno are the black. And a lot of times, mixed identity gets caught up in the black-white paradigm. How do we shift out? How do we make sure we're not just doing that over and over again? So that was really really important to me. And it's funny. And what ended up happening just by an accident is I was like, we went in the film, you may have noticed, it's back-to-back Filipino kids, but one is half black and one is half white. But in the Bay Area, it's like, I felt really good to be like, because I've heard from Filipinos, they don't feel like they're in... When the Asian conversation comes up, Filipinos don't always feel like they're a part of the Asian conversation. So I felt really good about, this is Bay Area accurate. There are a lot of Filipinos out here. So I kept going, is it weird that we're going back-to-back Filipino? Like, that's the Bay Area.
It was appreciated. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Because I felt like it, and you still get a conversation about Filipino identity just through the nature of these kids and then Paolo. Yeah.
Just like our friends at Blindspotting dedicated an episode to Filipino cultures because it is so prevalent in the base.
I mean, when I moved from Chicago, I don't know that I knew anything about Filipino culture at all. Like, nothing. Like, moved there. I'm sure there are Filipino people in Chicago. Chicago is very segregated. those Filipinos probably have a block or two somewhere, but yeah. It's not something that I was engaged in. And so for me coming out here, I was just like, wait, what? Who? What? Wait, what? Stonestown Mall? Like, just like, all like, what are you talking? Like Lumpia?
Daly City?
Yeah.
Daly City.
I was just like, what? And it really took me like to understand. And then I was really happy to sort of be like, to put these kids in the thing. And it was just funny that by nature of the Bay Area, Filipinos show up when you say, we want to talk to people. There, of course.
Especially if you have snacks or drinks.
Yeah, we had plenty of snacks.
Catering.
And drinks. Yes. We had my daughters brought games from the house so the kids could have something to do between interviews. Yeah.
But you also interview your mother and Melissa's mother, your mother-in-law. How that must have been a little complicated. I don't know.
How much can you say on mic?
I mean, so here's the funny.
That's all I want to know.
Obviously, and I say this in the film, me and my mom had those conversations about race a lot. We were trying to figure out what else should be in the film when we realized we wanted to have like a variety of different versions of the conversation. So not all parents, not all kids, not just kids and their parents. So then it became about like the older generation. And my mom's always down to be in anything. She's mad when she's not in my stuff. She's like, I have opinions about Bill Cosby. I know you do. So my mom, I knew my mom would do it. I was like, but I thought like it would be such a better conversation if it was my mom and Melissa's mom, Chris. But Chris has been very clear throughout my life. It's even weird when I say her, call her by her first name, that she has zero interest in the camera. Zero interest in being referenced in my comedy act. Zero interest in any of that. But I said to Melissa, I was like, I talked to Melissa about it. We're like, that would be a good idea. And Melissa's like, basically like, let me see what I can do. it's like, let me talk to them. I need to go talk to my manager. And so Melissa talked to her mom. And I think her mom showed up for her granddaughters. Cause she is like, my mom's a good grandmother. Melissa's mom is like the one from the movies. Who's like baking and sewing and drawing and doing art projects. And she's doing she's got a whole grandmother kit. Like she's, it's funny. You call somebody crafty. It sounds like an insult. She's crafty, but I mean, she knows all the crafts. And so I just felt like I think she showed up because this is what I need to do for my granddaughters. And she had learned a lot about race and racism just by virtue of the fact that she had these and also has lived through the last several years of America. So I think she showed up for her granddaughters, but was very nervous. Even when I talk to her now, she's still nervous about it. Oh, it's funny because I did the Gayle King morning show, CBS Mornings. I call it the Gayle King show. There's other people on the show. And Gayle King was like, ooh, your mother-in-law looks scared. I looked up. And Chris was like, I was not scared. I was mad. She was like, I wanted to talk to Gayle King. So, but she put herself in a vulnerable position. And also, my mom came like ready to have a conversation. She's had a million times and was not going to take it easy on when she was talking about like white people were the enemy. I was like, come on, Ma, can you pull it back a little bit?
Yeah.
But she was not going to like, she was just going to do what she did. But it was like, and at the end, they connect basically over being the grandmothers of these two beautiful daughters, of these two granddaughters. So, but it was definitely like, I was surprised we did it. And also that day, I'm going to sort of rat on my mom. My mom was just in a mood because I had like, we had everybody draw pictures of themselves because we were just sort of, we wanted activities so people, and my mom started to write a poem about how she wasn't an artist. My medium is words. So, and I just went, threw it away and said, draw a picture of yourself. And she got pissed. She got so mad. And so I think Chris ended up being some of the beneficiary or the, but Chris stood there, and not like she was mad at Chris, but she just sort of like came out really hard about the conversation about racism. So.
And that was the first time they've ever had a conversation
about that. Yeah, they've had many conversations in life, but they're friendly, but they're not like friends, but they've never had that. No, nothing close.
Well, and any conversation is normally organic. It's not like this focused.
Yeah. Not like sit down and talk about
your,
this.
Yeah. And ignore the camera.
Yeah.
But honestly, Chris, you did a great job if you're listening, and to sit across from your mom would be intimidating for most people, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I have days where I'm like, oh, not today, but no, but so yeah. So it's
because
like,
she's amazing. And
she's amazing.
So
luckily I know my mom's weaknesses so I can pull those out to get her to settle down. But it's like Superman. You got to have some kryptonite with you in case they get like. It just felt to me like I'm benefiting from this conversation. My daughters are benefiting from it. But also I haven't seen a lot of these. There's probably a whole show in just getting older Americans from different racial groups to talk to each other. That's probably its own separate series.
Yes.
You know? But so it felt like to me, like, again, like, let's have different versions of this and then bring the granddaughters in at the end so you can see that like the reason why this conversation is existing between these two people is because of these young girls.
I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about your Peabody Award, if that's okay.
Yes, we can. I mean, that's, yeah.
First of all, I know, like, I've heard of a Peabody Award, mm-hmm. but can you, like, break it down, what it means, yes. and also what you got it for?
So, the way that the Peabody Award was actually created was, of course, by a rich white guy.
Well, Mr. Peabody? Yeah, I don't know.
But it was intended to be the Pulitzer Prize of radio. That's how it was created. And then it became, because that's how old it is. It's pre-television. Like, you know, so it's a Pulitzer. And so now it is basically like the Pulitzer Prize of media.
Okay.
So like that it's not a thing you can campaign for. You can apply to it, but you can't, like, it's not like an Oscar campaign. Vote for me. There's like a small group of people who vote on who wins them. And you only win them by people voting unanimously on your project. So, like, there were.
Wow, it's like the Pope.
Yes, exactly. So there's
smoke.
So this year
there's smoke comes in.
Yeah. There was. Yeah. Is that Cosby smoke? Sorry.
It's okay.
It's fine. So 1,400 people applied, and 30 people won.
Holy shit.
It is very. It's like, you know. So it's
very,
like,
prestigious.
And there's no way to, like with the Oscars, you can have an Oscar party or for your consideration for Emmys, but there's none of that. You just sort of like send it in, and you sit back, and then you go, "Oh, I was nominated." Then you wait a few days. Oh, we won. You know. So for years, it's been a thing that, like, it's talked about. Like, you work on a project, maybe this could be the one that wins. It's just one of those things that you're like, but you can't really make it happen. So I know, like, I worked with people on Bourdain Show who won Peabody's for Bourdain. Mm-hmm. I always thought United Shades. I was like, I feel like this could be, but I don't even know if CNN made us apply. I have no idea. But this, we send in the application, and you just sort of like, I sort of stopped thinking about it because you don't want to think about it. When we got nominated, I felt like I won because it was like, again, 60 people get nominated, 30 people win. And to hear, and even to get nominated, you have to be unanimously voted in. So I was just like, that's a Peabody nomination. Change my bio, to whatever.
Yes,
you know,
your LinkedIn, really.
Yeah, my LinkedIn. Yes, my LinkedIn, which is like a old west ghost town. And then it was like we won, and it's really the thing that we found out. This is so cool. If you're credited on a Peabody winning project, then you are a Peabody winner. So you're saying, like, when I won Emmys for United Shades, it's only for like the handful of producers who work on the show. It does not also go to the sound engineer, to the
whole team.
The whole team wins a Peabody. So you can set, you can, so like people who worked in United Shades who didn't actually work producers can't say I won an Emmy. They can say I was on an Emmy award winning project. If you were credited in a Peabody award, you have won a Peabody.
That's incredible.
Which is just great for so many people who like worked in that project, who can now who took a chance to work on that project. A lot of black women on that project who were like, also like, what happens to me when this comes out? Are people going to find out? There's people talking about, should I use a fake name? And now those people, it's sort of like, there was like in the middle of that thing, I thought maybe this is never going to come out. Maybe it's going to end my career. Maybe my whole thing, maybe everything's over. So to come through the other side and all the good things that have come from it, and to have that be sort of the final cherry of the thing, you just feel like, you know, like, it. A lot of hard work into that and went into it. And, it doesn't work if the survivors don't show up and tell their stories.
Yeah.
And so they put themselves in a real vulnerable position. And so I'm happy that they get to say, I want a Peabody.
That's incredible. Yeah. Wow. Congratulations.
I think you should get rings made or something. Yeah. Like the world championship.
That would be, like the giant NBA championship that are obnoxious. I'll just put my Peabody on a ring.
Or wear it around your necklace, whatever. Wow. Yeah.
So it's like, and you know, the Cosby Project was a 4-hour docuseries deep dive into the life, career, and crimes of Bill Cosby. And I knew there's a lot of work in it, but you never know what people are going to think about it. And to feel like it's sort of like now is sort of going to stand some test of time. It just also feels like I'm still the guy who was like, it seems like yesterday I was in the back of the punchline hoping to get up on a Sunday night to do 7 minutes. Like, and also scared. I hope I get to go up. Also, I hope that I don't go up because I think I suck. You know, like, I hope I go up, but I don't. But man, this my new 7 minutes isn't really working. You know, like I'm the guy who's, I still connect to that guy. I'm still the guy who was like, I'm still the kid who was like, man, this Saturday Night Live is funny. That Eddie Murphy guy, I think he's got a future. Oh man, he's leaving
you
the show.
Called
to do,
it.
Yeah, he's leaving the show to do a movie called 48 Hours. Right. That's not going to work. You know, so I was a kid who watched SNL and wanted to be on SNL like Eddie Murphy. And that was the whole goal. And to be in this position, it both seems surreal, ridiculous, and awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that because I finally got around to reading your book, The Awkward Thoughts of W. Kamau Bell.
That book's not supposed to be read anymore.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I highly suggest it. But I loved how you talk about your parents taught you that you don't need the paper, meaning a diploma from Harvard or whatever, to get the information. You just need to work hard, which clearly you're a perfect example of that. But I wanted to know, like, how you maintain this work ethic but also practice self-care.
Oh, well, I just don't practice self-care.
Chicken burrito.
It's easy.
You ate the chicken burrito instead of the pork.
No, recently, like I said, I had my like yearly doctor's appointment, and he was like, let's be clear, do you want to live? I mean, I'm just kidding.
It got dark.
We go, everybody. We're going down.
It's going down. I'm in the part of my life where it's like, you know, you may wanna
ride a bike or something. Walk up the steps.
Walk up the steps.
Oh, sorry.
It's like I've tried to say bike to you years before, but maybe just choose steps.
Okay.
No, so it's like I am sort of like currently going through time to just sort of really think about things in a more clear way, especially as I'm about to like go out and be doing a lot more filming again. Like, it's just like I need to really focus on that. But like, we just had a conversation before you got here. My wife Melissa was here. You know Anna Sale, Death, Sex, and Money?
Yes, yeah.
She was here, and they're friends, and Anna was talking about she had just come back from vacation, and Melissa was like, can you tell Kamau about why vacations are good?
Yes, mm-hmm. Vacations matter.
Mm. Yeah, and so, and I'm like, I love vacations. It's just, I feel like because I'm an independent contractor still, basically.
Right.
Like, I don't know, there's no off season. There's no, and so.
You're always working.
You're always working, mm-hmm. And you're always like, oh, if this thing doesn't work, I need another thing. So, I think I maintain a good attitude because I'm doing work I believe in. I get to work with people that I've gotten to a point where I'm generally only working with people I really love and respect and who love and respect me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even this office is a manifestation of like I said, it was hard to get in here because we don't want everybody just walking in here, you know, so the people I work with in this office are all people who get what I'm trying to do and they have their own ideas and we're all working and we're all pulling in the right direction. And I'm at a place where I don't have to work on every idea every day. We have a people. And so the work gets me excited. And then also both taking care of my kids literally, like through the financial means, but also like creating work that I think will leave them a good legacy of what our family does. Because when I talk to my kids about it, I say our work is this, not my work. Like sometimes, but I'm really trying to say we do this. We do. And so 1000% me is a great example of like, we all did that. Mm-hmm. That's not so that like, and they know that like the way that people talk to me is about like, it's not like your dad is, oh, he's so funny. It's like, thank you for your work. That's the thing I get a lot now is thank you for your work. And so it's really important to me, as my mom did for me. It's about like creating a legacy that your kids know when my parent was here, he cared and tried and also create an example for me, no matter what I do, to care and try, you know? So that, and then, you know, I'm at my core, I'm incredibly lazy. I'm incredibly like procrastination prone, and I can't wait to get back to that. Someday.
Like lazy and like laying on the couch and watching like Law and Order or? Yeah, like that kind of
maybe
stuff.
Maybe not Law and Order anymore, but yeah, that like just like, I mean, and there's still some of that in there, but like I really am, do hope that there's a time where I can like sort of like hand my baton to Juno and Sammy and Asha and be like, you guys got it. I'll be over here.
Mm-hmm. My pajamas.
Yeah, I'll be in my pajamas. I'll be podcasting from my couch. But it'll be a podcast where it's just like, I just talk and like, you know, like those podcasts that white guys have where they just talk and there's no interruption, no guests.
And they also have millions of listeners
somehow. Yeah, but they're just talking. They're just talking. They're not like, it's just talking. It's just yammering. I want that's what I'll be. Yeah.
No comment.
Yeah. Sort subject. Yeah. Man,
white talk.
Yeah. Well, okay, now you white talk. Half white talk. But now that you have the production company, clearly your wife has been on camera, your mother, your daughters are camera ready. Is there going to be a reality show like Kamau's House?
Oh, God.
House of Kamau.
Is that going to be on Bravo? Is that what's happening?
It rhymes.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I mean, if that happens, you'll know that, like, one of two things happened. Either I made some bad financial decisions, or the bag was so big, I was like, okay. Remember when Ozzy Osbourne had his
yeah,
show?
Yeah, of course. There
was apparently, he didn't say one word that I understood.
Yeah, no.
There was apparently one daughter who just refused to be on the show. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So he has three kids. And so that might be the Kamau reality show. Where's Kamau? Right.
You're always walking out a door. Yeah. You're like leaving all the time.
Or how, like when Kim Kardashian was married to Kanye West. It's weird how he's not on her show about her life. That's weird that her husband, who she loves so much and who loves her and they're so close standing, that he's not on the show that is dedicated to her life. So I'll be the Kanye West on my own show. I'll just be over there. That's the only way in which I'm like Kanye West, just to be clear.
Are we allowed to talk about CNN at all? Or?
Sure. What do you want to talk
about? I'm just curious, because I don't think there was like a big mention of anything, and then they have new
everything
and it's now terrible, but can you talk about, I mean, they were very supportive of you in your career.
Yeah, we were I'd like to think we were supportive of each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I also think I got to CNN at a very different era than the current CNN.
Correct. Are you happy that now you can maybe do your own thing and don't have to be connected to CNN?
I don't have any sort of weirdness about what I say. They didn't, there was like announcements that they were canceling their original series division.
Right. But that was, that's it.
Yeah. And embedded in that was like, oh, that means United States of America goes away. But a lot
and
of
Lisa
people,
Ling.
And Lisa Ling.
The people that.
And even like Stanley Tucci, who was like a hit show that won my Emmys the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So like, to me, it was like, if they're letting him go, of course I go. Like, because that show is the easiest show
to watch.
A white guy travels around Italy
eating
and eats
pasta.
Yeah, like what? That show's never been a bad. That show's always been a hit. So, so it's funny though. I literally went to CNN last week to do press for 1000% Me.
Great.
And there are people in the building who are like, "Do you still have a show?"
Like, wow.
People who like are like, I'm not gonna name names, but people who are like, are high up at CNN, like, you know, who are like on air talent. Who are like, are you still? Is that not like, so they clearly like didn't go out of their way to make any sort of, and you know, it's fine. And my agents don't care. Like, you know, cause, and I, but I'll say this, I sort of saw the winds of change coming from a while out. If you're at CNN, I'm sure Lisa probably can say the same thing. You can sort of feel, feels like things are shifting. Mm. So I was really, the Cosby doc, as stressful as it was, I was like, well, at least when this comes out, people know I do something else. Mm-hmm. So when the Cosby doc came out, I already saw the winds of change shifting. And so by the time it sort of shifted to like, oh, we're not doing original series anymore, I was already like, oh, I'm over here now. It's like the movie Casino. Now I'm across the street now. Like I had already like prepared a life that was leading me in this direction. So if for some reason they were like, we still want United Shades, maybe I could have like, all right. But I had already like, I'd already packed my bag and figured out that was over. When I got to CNN, the thing that really invited me into CNN was Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
Not him literally, but if that guy can do this show here, then there's probably a thing I can do here. Of course he passes away, but I'd already established himself. But like the fact that like there's no way Bourdain could do what he did at CNN now.
No.
Which means neither can I. So yeah. it doesn't feel like a loss. It feels like, you know, it's like when somebody, it's not you, it's me. It's like CNN's like saying, it's not you, it's me. It is you. it's definitely like, I didn't do anything differently.
No.
And I know that the things that I pulled off at CNN, I was the only person who could have done it. So I feel very, and I know that I won them enough awards where they feel, where they can't be like, that show didn't work, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know there were conversations on my show that were necessary for the network to have, because they couldn't, I would be told we can't have these conversations anywhere else on the network. So we did good work together. There's a lot of good people who stood in that building. Amy Antelis, who was my boss, was a great mentor and a great person to work with. And we had a lot of great conversations where I sort of explained things to her that she didn't know, but she also mentored me in this business, whether she knows it or not. So I have no hatred or anything. I love her. But it's clear that what I did would not work at the current CNN. And there was even some talk at some point about me doing something else there, like that wasn't United Shades, and it was just like, I don't want to look like I'm like I just didn't know what that looked like. And I was like, I'd rather, this is the thing, this is what you got to know about me. I'd rather figure it out myself than let somebody else figure it out for me.
Yeah. Honestly, also, that was your pre-Peabody career.
Yeah.
And now we're in the post-Peabody career.
We are post-Peabody.
So it's like ADBC, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
so
no,
like,
it's like
onward
yeah.
and upward.
No, I just, yeah, I mean, no question. Believe me, winning that Peabody, like all the good work I did at CNN was great. But the thing I've gotten most acclaim for is a thing that wasn't United Shades of America.
Right.
That is the kind of work I want to continue doing. I want to continue directing, producing docs, some of which will be personal to me and some of which will not be so personal. But that I'm like, that's what I want to do anyway. So it just sort of like creates a path for that. And I'm in the middle of a lot of development, a lot of different projects, and it feels exciting. And yes, you got to figure out how to pay the rent on this giant office space and all those kinds of things. And that's also kind of exciting. But I'm not like, but I feel very good about the place I'm in, literally, physically, mentally, and maybe I'll take a vacation someday.
Is comedy still moving around?
Do you, my agent,
do
my
you want? Oh, oops. But
no,
do
no, no,
you
no,
do
like,
you want to take a stage?
So here's, I love stand-up comedy. I miss stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of feel bad for stand-up comedy right now, just as a like.
Why? Go into that.
There's just a lot of like, ugh, in stand-up comedy right now. There are many great people, but just the conversation around stand-up comedy being sort of located in a place of cancel culture is sort of depressing.
People have acted like
it's a place where you can't even say, you can say whatever you want to say. You just got to be able to stand on your square.
Yeah.
And cancel culture has been weaponized as a like, people sort of trying to get themselves canceled and they can say you couldn't cancel me. Like it's a whole like, so
I they're making money off that.
Yeah. They're making money off of like, they tried to cancel me and they couldn't cancel me. What are you talking about?
Right.
But I still like, it's funny, recently I've been saying things even around the office. It's funny. And people are like, are you working on an act? Like, is that true, Zakiya? Yeah. Like, did you write that down? So I still, at my very core, I'm a stand-up comedian. I think the only thing that stops me from doing it is like, it is a time-consuming.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when an athlete retires and goes, I'm going back to play my professional sport. You can't just show up. You gotta like go back to the gym and you gotta do it. So the whole idea of like going back to the gym and going back to clubs and trying to stuff is a little bit like, when would I do that? So having said that. One of my favorite people in the world, Ty, who runs a theater, Stageworks, in San Francisco, is closing down. Mm. And I used to do like sort of random shows there every now and again back in it's on Valencia Street in San Francisco. And Ty reached out and goes, do you just want to do two nights and just do whatever you want to do? And I was like, yeah, I kind of do. So now I'm like, I have like booked nights in September to like,
yes,
to like do, I guess, stand-up comedy. Because that's sort of like, that's how I do it. I jump in the deep end. So I'll do like, so yeah. So in that sense, I'm starting to think about it, even though it's like a ridiculous, I don't have the time to do it, but I just, Ty made the offer and she made me an offer I couldn't refuse. So I do want to do stand-up comedy. Yeah, it's just funny. My manager's like, but what are you, like, we have all these things on a list and all these things. Like, but when are you going to do back stand-up? So like, I'm like, but that doesn't even make as much money as the rest of this stuff. And he's like, they really like me as a stand-up. And so it feels good. And then random people in the street are like, what are you doing stand-up again? So it feels funny. I thought I'd sort of like almost like retired, but people won't. It's like Unforgiven. I can't be retired.
You're good at it.
I had some good things. I had a few good ones.
And there's so many things to talk about.
There are a lot of things to talk. That's the other thing. There are a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things. I really love stand-up comedy, and I want to get back to it. But I want to get back to it in a very intentional way that doesn't feel like I'm just on stage because I think that's the thing. And when I would look at stand-up comedy, there's just clearly like what I see people who are intentionally doing it. And people who are just doing it to do it. And I don't judge those things, but I just don't want to, I want to be in the intentional side, not the just like, I had to write some jokes because I had to be here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your whole life's intentional.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I don't take breaks.
But you also need a vacation anyway.
Yeah. And I've started to I've started to walk like where this is about 40 minutes from where I live. And I've started to walk to work, which has been a very,
it's good for your heart.
Yeah. It's good for my heart and good for my brain
mm-hmm.
to not, because my old, and my old office was in our house, and it's like you wake up and you walk out of like the kids, ah, you got breakfast. And so I'm at my computer on a Zoom meeting. Hello. And it's just like, there's no like decompression time. So yeah. Now we've sort of like just baked in decompression time.
Nice.
Yes. I would like your input. I was in Germany recently, and my friend loves you. She's seen your stand-up. And she was bartending, right, this one night at a bar. And this older German guy is kind of being racist towards me, but I don't know what he's saying because it's in German. And my friend is behind the bar kind of trying to politely tell him to shut the fuck up, basically. Yeah. And
is
I turned
your friend
to,
white German?
She's white German, yeah, okay. Born and raised in East Germany. And this guy next to me that I'd made friends with, I was like, is racism happening right now? And he said, yes. And I was like, okay. And I was like, okay, so I just sat there and I let them have their conversation. And then she explained to me what happened. And she was like, I told her about your Do the Work workbook.
Yeah.
And she was like, can he make one for Germany? And I'll make these assholes sit and do it and exercise whenever shit like this happens. Otherwise, they can't get another beer.
Oh, my God.
So this
that's a thicker book.
Yeah, exactly. So this was a real conversation I had about
wow.
you with my
Thank
friend.
You in and, Germany. And, see, and yeah. I've never even been to Germany, and yet there's somebody there who thinks I'm funny.
Yes.
Oh, look at me.
Yeah.
That's nice to know that it's made it across the you know, it's, I mean, I just ran into some guy on the street. He's like, have you ever been to Liberia? I'm like, no, there's so many places I haven't been. Mm-hmm. That I would like to go. Yeah, that's funny. Well, yeah,
But now you have to work on that.
I'll sign that to Kate. Kate, my co-author of the Work, is the one who really does a lot of the work. So she'll be happy to tear into Germany.
Yeah, another side project. You have at least one person that will pre-order that.
Oh,
yeah,
good, good. Sure. That's, I'm sure our publisher will be happy to know we have one promised pre-order. One promised pre-order, so we'll get on it.
Well, thank you so much. We love talking to you. We appreciate your time so much. And thank you for doing what you're doing. Everybody go watch 1000% Me on HBO. Please do yourself a favor.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. You can find more information about this episode in our show notes.
If you're missing us, you can visit us at bitchtalkpodcast.com to sign up for our newsletter and buy us a cup of coffee.
Did you know we're also on the radio? You can find us at BFF.fm.
And lastly, rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. All the cool bitches are doing it.
This podcast is a proud member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.